Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to the first ever What Culture Gaming podcast. This thing has been a long time coming. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hey.
And Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure.
Yes, and we'll rotate some people in and out as the episodes continue to roll in. So I thought we would rattle through a bunch of news posts, little things that you can also check out on the website and on the YouTube channel as well for more in-depth things. We'll have a little bit of a banter and then we'll crack on with some questions. So first order of business is Sekiro Shadows Die Twice.
Ooh, what a game.
Yes.
What a game. Game, man. I mean, this is shaping up to be one of my favorite looking and possibly playing games of all time, because just the atmosphere of being set in like Edo Japan, having all of these sort of like crazy monstrous things going on, and also have it sort of look as beautiful as it does.
It does look gorgeous. The thing that broke the other day was that it seems to be having this huge focus on stealth, which we did do a video on.
Yep.
But basically it just seems that you can thin the ranks of people and you can dive in and kind of just play it like Tenchu, which is, I have wanted a sequel to Tenchu since Tenchu Z, which a lot of people don't like.
Tenchu 2, Rise of the Assassin, or whatever it was called, that was the best one because it had a level editor and it was very, well, I won't say bad, but it was rudimentary, but I got a lot out of it.
I was always too young for Tenchu. You know? Right. I played a little bit of it, so this kind of means nothing for me. It's the Bloodborne comparisons that I'm really interested in, because it looks like a sort of even faster paced, more blockbuster style Bloodborne.
Yeah.
There is one thing that we haven't really touched upon yet that I see a lot in the comments, and that is it's being published by Activision.
Now that is a worry.
Yes, is a worry.
Why? How? When did they get their hooks in?
Since the very beginning of it, apparently.
But they kept it quiet because obviously there is the kind of social stigma of being associated with Activision. Now, I totally understand why, but the only thing is that we have to admit that Activision, even though they don't get as much public love as possibly they should do because of the fact of all the stuff they've done in the past, they do make slick games. They make very slick games.
They are,
they're slippery bananas themselves, so they make very slippery games.
Mm-hmm. And it's weird that this is one of their games outside of like their like big core franchise. It's not a Call of Duty. It's not a sort of Overwatch. I know that's Blizzard, but it's Activision Blizzard. Mm-hmm. So to see them sort of pick this up, it seems like it's more along the lines of, I know it's a weird comparison, but Crash Insane Trilogy. It's sort of like something that's going to give them
goodwill.
Favorite
game of 2016, yeah?
Yeah, that's going to be the best game of 2016.
I can't even.
2017.
At some point, we might do some sort of Game of the Year-based podcast ranking thing, because, oh my God.
We need to do that.
2017's best game of the year, according to these two people, was Crash Bandicoot the Insane Trilogy, which I struggle to find the words, and usually I can talk for many hours.
The point is, they didn't crowbar microtransactions into the Crash Bandicoot game.
No,
so
I
hope they won't do it in this. I hope it's one of those releases that they put out and then it gains them a lot of goodwill from it. And it's a high quality, just sort of prestige title in a way. It's not it's going to give them a lot of money.
It will give them. It answers a question that you posed in an article recently, which was Activision have stopped making games. This is actually a direct counterpoint to that, saying, yes, we are tying up with other publishers to make unique IPs.
Yeah.
And I just hope this game does well, because I feel like it's striding very confidently in a niche that just hasn't been filled.
I do like that, like, you have, like, you know, they started out with Demon's Souls, Dark Souls, and then you went into Bloodborne, like, more action focus and dodging and that kind of thing. And it's like, well, where do you go from here? And their response was, well, why don't we try a different genre entirely and do stealth?
Yeah.
And, like, that's just cool. I mean, like I said, from the Tenchu perspective, but also just the idea of FromSoft going back to stealth again, because people forget that they did Tenchu in the first place.
I'd be worried actually if they went further down the action of the line of putting even more action in, because one of the games that I felt was really tried to ape what Dark Souls, Demon's Souls were doing, but did it in possibly the wrong way because it was too over the top, was The Surge. I feel
I know you did, but they tried
too hard, and it was kind of like Lords of the Fallen and stuff like that, where they basically just try and turn it into an action RPG, and that's not necessarily why people love Dark Souls.
No, I think it's more like contemplative, like really deliberate level design and like, you know, grinding through it and all that kind of thing. I mean, you just played through Dark Souls Remastered, didn't you?
Oh, it is. I mean, it's always been great. I've always loved Dark Souls, but going through it again, I've played Dark Souls 1, I've played Bloodborne, and I played Dark Souls 3, and I really love the series, but for some reason, I went back to Dark Souls Remastered. And it's not that it clicked, because it clicked for me somewhere along Bloodborne, but it was like I was seeing it again. I knew exactly what I was doing. I understood it so thoroughly. It's weird that it took so many hours and so many games to get to that point. I mean, I always thought I got it. It was always one of my favorite games. And I played it again, and I was like, man, this works. After so long away, after twice through, this works. And I hope Sekiro is exactly the same. I hope I get that same, not complexity, but that same depth to it. I hope it has the same depth to it.
I think it should do. Moving on from that, one of the other things, just a small thing, is that God of War is finally getting a new game plus mode. They're rolling out on August 20th. So if you just haven't any excuse to go back through what is possibly the best game of the year so far, you can now do that starting out with everything that you finished with.
I realized the other day I had a sort of moment where I jolted out of bed and I was like, my God, I haven't beat the final Valkyrie in that. I remember getting
I just
freaked out. I was like, something in my OCD just went off. I was like, I need to go back and play it. But I'll be so rusty now that I couldn't do it when I was at the height of my powers. And I'm not going to be able to do it now.
So you're going to start again and then just go through?
I might do. But then it'll be even harder when I get to it at the end, because it'll have scaled.
Those Valkyrie fights are cheap and just frustrating and not fun. No, I've played through all the Souls games and Lords of the Fallen, Surge, everything. Like, give me hard games. But those fights, man, like, I don't know. You've got to dig deep to get through them.
See, I didn't think they were cheap. Once I got like the, because if you abuse, I can't remember what they're called, but the L1 and R1, R2 and L2 sort of super.
The runes.
If you sort of abuse them in a way and sort of wait till they kind of reload, you can take most of those Valkyries out easy. And that's what I was doing all the way through. But you can't do that with the last one. This last one. You cannot do it.
One of the biggest things that happened just yesterday was the Red Dead stuff, Red Dead gameplay.
It looks fantastic. I mean, Rockstar have just got this ability to take any premise and cover it with so much charm and style that it's just, it looks beautiful. And hopefully, according to, because I know that IGN, those cheeky whippets, managed to get a hands-on preview with it. And they said it was, to quote them, bloody brilliant.
Yes.
So I'm hoping that it will be as good when it comes out for us.
The thing that I want them to do more of, again, you can check out the video that we did, the reactions video me, Josh and Ewan did, but I want them to do, because they said they're going to do a series of videos like revealing different parts of the gameplay. So the first one was very like world focused, which looks great, but I want gameplay.
It was a bit of an odd choice to start with the sort of activities before the main, but then again, they are very clever. They're kind of doing how the opposite of Red Dead Redemption worked, where it was the main game they did for ages, and then when the DLC came out, they covered the sort of basics of the gambling and more sort of like horse racing and stuff like that. This time around, they're saying like, trust me, guys, you're going to want to wait for this one. But here's just something to whet the appetite.
Yeah, I think, when's it coming out? Like, it's
October 26th-ish.
Right.
It's that month.
So yeah, it's like, we're not that far off it, really.
No, not at all.
And it's just like, it's about time that you started showing off like the main differentiations from that to the first one. Like, I don't know, I want something more substantial.
Maybe they're just so confident.
They're Rockstar.
The amount of money that GTA 5 is still making them, they ain't hurting for cash.
Exactly.
So they can do whatever they bloody well wants.
Very true. The other thing that was massive was that me and you did a little video on that people can go and check out was EA's new mandate to move away from microtransactions and loot boxes and all that kind of stuff. They basically they've cottoned on to the fact that their reputation is
the moral compass.
Yes,
wasn't it?
And they've got an internal mandate now called the EA Moral Compass, or at least that was how one of their guys described it. And it means that on the development side, as soon as games start getting put together, they want to make sure that they're not, I don't know, abusing ethical or moral standards, which should mean that going forward, we don't get any games that are pilfered to get as much money out of people as possible.
Yeah, if it's true,
I don't believe it.
But
to be honest,
then
but
again,
I mean, sure.
EA likes money, and we have to remember that talk is cheap.
Yes.
So that
EA likes money.
I don't know if you've noticed, but they're they're not your mum and dad publisher down the road, really, are they? You know, they're not the local greengrocers. They are Tesco's.
I love that. That was your pivot. Not like Walmart or something.
No. They are Tesco's.
They're the conglomerate that is Tesco's. Yeah, I mean, the next big thing on their docket is Battlefront 5.
Yes.
Battlefield 5. So I guess we'll see how that gets handled. But because they've already got cosmetic stores and things like that.
Yeah,
but
and as I was saying to you guys before, like, I genuinely think that the cosmetics thing, I've got no issue with it. That's what Overwatch does and things like that. That's fine. I do have, after reading the comments from the video that we put out, maybe there's a proviso that I should add on, which is just that I don't agree with randomly generated cosmetics. So say I'm pouring in 10 quid extra into this game because I want to buy, like, I don't know, a Drummer Boy jacket to relive those MCR days, you know, back in the day.
Who doesn't?
Black Parade, where am I at? But it's like, maybe I want to buy that. I don't want to randomly hope I get that. Like, that's a problem.
I'm totally with you. I think cosmetic DLC is fine ostensibly, but I hate just rolling a dice and hoping I get something that looks cool. I played a lot of Overwatch. I played loads of Rainbow Six Siege, but my characters in those games look absolutely naff.
Yeah.
Rainbow Six Siege especially, it's extortionate the amount of money you have to pay to get like a skin or something like that. Otherwise, you roll the dice and open packs and hope you get it. And it's just, I want to look cool and I want to be rewarded for the amount of time I put into these games. And I think you used to get that, but we've moved away from that sort of sensibility now.
God, you remember the days of just being able to unlock skins? Like, I remember the first time, and I know it's quite late in the day, that I really realised it was when I was playing Resident Evil 5.
Right.
And do you remember that you got the pre-order bonuses for unlocking, not pre-order bonuses, was it? For completing Mercenaries, you unlock different outfits from Leon and Shiva. And then afterwards, it was like, but you can also buy these ones. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize that I would have to ever buy what my character looks like.
I also had one of those moments. I think it was with Batman Arkham City or Arkham Knight.
Oh,
probably
City
even
was really
both.
Bad.
Oh, but they had 12 different outfits, didn't they?
You had to pre-order them. And obviously, at the time, I had no disposable income at all. Yeah. And I was like, I can't buy skins. It was like,
I want everyone knows the best skin from that one was the Batman Beyond one. Hands down, they could have easily charged like £5 a piece for that and I would have bought it. But the fact is that they did it in so many different ways. Like, I'll pre-order it from game and you get this one, pre-order it from GameStop. I was like, whatever.
The thing is, though, like, you don't realize just how much the industry steered into that stuff. Like, I mean, just the fact that even Bethesda, like, the amount of money that they make from Fallout Shelter, it makes up like a huge chunk of their overall revenue. And it's just like, obviously, there's the massive moral, ethical outcry as to how games are pilfered to death, but it makes up so much money they can't deny it.
No,
like nearly everything is a stopgap. It's like, oh no, sorry, yeah, no, we'll fix it, but no, but seriously, people are still spending a lot of money on this and we need to keep these revenue streams going.
The thing is you've got to look at it almost like the way that YouTube runs. It was when back before we started, it was like the Wild West. Like, anyone could come along and wouldn't make any money, but you'd be huge, and as soon as the money came into it, people just went crazy with it. And now we're getting the limitations, now we're getting the clampdowns and the advertising revenue and changes of the policies and stuff like that. But that's what's happening with games now. We've had the Wild West section where people are going crazy and can charge anything for anything. I mean, we all remember the Skyrim horse armor as being one of the most egregious examples of that. But now we are finally getting to the point where, no, loot boxes, they're illegal.
In certain countries.
But that is a stepping point to move from. And I really hope that the gaming industry doesn't just find another way to manipulate and instead just goes, right, this is the accepted practice. Everyone is okay with this. Let's just do this.
That's what I do not have faith in at all. I won't have faith in it. I mean, we had season passes, for instance. Not season passes. What was the online kind of pass that you had for Arkham City where you had to enter a code to play online or get like a character stuff?
The one where you got to play as Catwoman and it was actually like a part of the story that
was just
cut.
Yeah, like season pass type thing.
We had that, and then everyone was like, this isn't cool, we don't want to pay extra for buying pre-owned, and that went away. And then we sort of got loot boxes, and now they're going away. And
we recently had an example with PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. They had this thing called an event pass,
where basically, because Fortnite has one.
But you had it so that like the items that you got from it, they expired after a certain time. So you ended up being like, oh, I've paid money for this, but now I don't have it. Strange, absolutely strange how we're doing it. But people will try everything to get into this.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Rock Band used to sell songs, but the thing, you've got to keep them. But that's the perfect way to do it. That is DLC that is totally fine with your game. It's optional. You don't need to unlock it.
I mean, it goes back around to what you said about, like, I remember the days when you got a full game. Like, I remember the only time I ever cared about skins in a game, and this is like not considering the reputation this game franchise has now, but Dead or Alive 2 on the PS2, steering away from all the minging side of it. Yeah. Dead or Alive 2, back when it first came out on the PS2, very, very good fighting game. And there were a load of skins that you could get. And I remember just playing through that, just being like, well, if I beat this many people or I keep playing the arcade mode or whatever, I can get more stuff. And it didn't even enter your mind that someone could charge for that. But I mean, now that's the reality of it. Yeah. It's just weird.
Side note. Yes. Best outfit in that was Zach's Teletubby with the big dangly knob on his forehead.
I always liked Hayabusa's one from Ninja Gaiden.
Oh, yeah, that was nice as well.
Get the actual skin from that.
Yeah, that's
but yeah, so that's a little smattering of news things.
I'll tell you what the biggest casualty of microtransactions are. What? Cheat codes. We don't have cheat codes anymore because they figured
as well.
We can just sell you these in a way or not put any effort into them at all. A bit like skins, but we just, no more big head mods, no more.
Well, I was about to say, if you had an issue with somebody, it would be GoldenEye, big heads, paintball mode on, let's go. That's the set. Everyone's like, oh, Final Destination on Smash, get out.
Oh, God, no. It was always that. Or for me, it was always like Halo 2, any sort of old school Halo.
Which version of Final Destination now that there's 800 million levels in it?
1v1 me on Rust Jewels, 1v1.
Oh, don't even start with that, mate. Knives only. Let's go.
Yeah, we'll bring that back on Twitch since we're rolling all these things out. Mm. So yes, that's a nice little smattering of news things. I thought we'd just delve into questions. I asked on Twitter anyone had any questions, and we've got quite a decent response. We've got quite a lot to pick from. So
cool.
I'm gonna get you guys to pick some numbers, and we can allocate them to questions as we go. Okay, but I like the randomness of the first one that came in, or one of the first ones that came in. It just says, "What will Just Cause 4 need to do to recapture the enjoyment of the second game following the disappointment of the third?" And that one comes from Chris Davey.
That's quite a tough one, actually, because I have been spoiled tremendously by the Just Cause 2 PC multiplayer mod, which just is bananas.
Like, I don't think my rig could handle that.
Mine couldn't either. Mine crashed so many times, but when it worked, it was amazing. Right. The thing is that like I love Just Cause. I think it's a fantastic franchise. It's possibly veering a bit too close to the Saints Row issue of being too silly for its own good.
Yeah,
and I feel like they can't really go anywhere beyond that point. Mm-hmm. So what I think they should do is really actually dial it back, maybe make it a little bit more story focused rather than it just being, way, go and just do all this thing. I feel like that would ground it a bit
more. See, my thing with the story stuff, because that's what they did in 3, it was like, oh, we're going to give Rico Rodriguez like a real backstory and we're going to do all that. And
the problem is that Rico Rodriguez as himself is a parody of action films. Yeah. So they should, no offense, possibly think about scrapping him and bringing in a new person to kickstart something again.
Yeah, especially if you're going to lean into the multiplayer side of things, because everybody can make their own person and just
Adding in a multiplayer like competitive side to it, imagine like doing sky glider races. Imagine doing like who can whip the most cars, but actually have it in a game mode. If they were going to go lean into the silliness that way, that would work.
That would be really cool.
Make Just Cause 5 or something online only and just have it as like a competitive. I know. I'm the devil.
So I guess, for mine, it would be something to do with, leaning into the ridiculousness, ditch anything in regards to trying to give the character like that weight and just kind of just lean into it. I mean, for me, the thing that tanked Just Cause 3 was just that it didn't run. Like on PS4, it was so spotty. And even if you wanted to give it a shot, I mean, I love Just Cause 2, but I just couldn't play it.
Yeah.
So that would kind of be my side of it.
I don't even want there to be sort of a big narrative or anything. I just want there to be purpose in what I am doing. Because I played 3 after I played through Avalanche Studios' Mad Max, because of obviously
what
you couldn't
a game,
bloody
by
play.
The way.
Oh god,
exactly,
yeah.
Exactly, what a game. But everything in that open world, you're doing ostensibly the same things you're doing in every other open world. You're taking out outposts, you're scavenging for the same old taff. But everything makes sense within that world. You're doing it for a reason. You're doing it to gain power, and everything feeds into something else. And it feels really connected, despite how desolate the bloody wasteland is as a whole. And it was fulfilling to actually do it. And then you wanted to do it, rather than it wasn't just telling you you can do it if you want to do it.
Yeah, sometimes that's the problem, isn't it? Like too much scope. It's almost blinding. It's that sandbox problem now, which like here is everything. You'd be like, okay, where do I start? It's like wherever you want to. It's like no, maybe a little nudge would help.
Yeah, like I'm not gonna lie, that's kind of what made me get a bit weird about Red Dead Redemption 2. Like even just on the reveal, I'm like, okay, there's a million things, but
we all know that it's going to be a great game,
of course,
but I understand your worry, because it's like, please don't distract me from something. Are you seeing this as a bait and switch thing where they're just going like, right, well maybe the main story's not as good as this
I don't know, like Dead Cells has been such a great reminder of just pure gameplay, like that game. I think, to be honest, like, suffers a little bit in not having any narrative drive apart from just just go kill stuff.
Yeah.
But the mechanics of that thing are so lush and enjoyable, and you know, you get so like lost in a loop of just playing it. And it's a reminder of like video games as a medium. Like you kind of you need both sides. And yeah, something like the open world problem is just like it's big, it's desolate, it's go figure it out.
Yeah.
Like just
yeah.
somewhere in there is the fun loop that we've designed, and hopefully you'll find it. And that's if you can kind of get lost in it. Next up is a question from Chris. You'll know who you are once I start reading this out. What old games would you like to see given the same treatment as Resident Evil 2? He says, personally, he'd like...
Oh, wow.
Personally, he'd like to see Siphon Filter.
What a shout.
Siphon Filter is a hell of a shout, but I don't know if it has a place these days.
Oh, mate, no. I actually went back and played this fairly recently.
You said,
yeah, it's actually... It hasn't held up as well as I would have thought of it, because it's still the controls are the thing that let it down. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, like, the story and the gameplay about Spy being, like, betrayed, I guess it's very cool.
I remember being brought up as a wee lad, and as soon as Siphon Filter entered the scene, I was like, trying to be Metal Gear, are you?
Yeah,
no.
Sure.
And I played the demo, and I was like, this isn't Metal Gear, and I just never played it again. But I've heard Siphon Filter is meant to be good.
I can't remember anything from Siphon Filter, but I remember playing the first one, and I think it was a bit of a... Is it Jack Bauer from 24?
Yeah.
His catchphrase was damn. Well, the guy from Siphon Filter said damn a lot, and I remember playing that with my dad in the
Can you name the man from Siphon Filter?
No.
Gabe Logan.
Gabe Logan, what
great
a good
name.
Logan.
What a great
Nothing name. Says threatening like Gabe Logan.
Only memory I have associated with that series is saying damn in front of my dad, and he taught me off. And I was like, come on, man. There's a lot of worse things I could say.
I can imagine a little Josh,
tiny
brother,
Josh.
Like giving his father some lip.
Yeah. As his dad slowly unbuttons his tail between my legs.
Like, go on, you.
Not again, not
That'll
again.
That'll be in our saddest gaming moments coming soon to a Friday chat near you. I'm trying to think of a
retro game that we'd like to see the Resident Evil 2 treatment. I mean, the thing is that I've always wanted Resident Evil 2 to be remade. So for me, that's
true.
However, I would love to see, and this is way out there, and it's not even in the same realms, but I'd like to see a return of Point Blank.
Oh, mate, you'd have to imagine. Bring back light
I want the G-Con gun.
Yes,
I had
the G-Con 45.
Yeah,
man.
I had that, and I had Time Crisis. I had Time Crisis 2. It was the dream.
Point Blank is a phenomenal shooter as well. Yeah. Like, just
in fact,
just
I'd rather have the Time Crisis. Just bring that back. Yeah. That'd be amazing.
That's still in arcades, but they never do. Like, it's just because the whole laser gun market fell apart. Like, it just didn't have anything to go from. It didn't transition to the PS2. Even though I remember buying like guns for the PS2.
I'll tell you what, actually, I want to refine my answer, because I own two copies of this game and it's absolutely phenomenal. And I bet you neither of you have played it.
Go on.
Hurdy-Gurdy.
I've played Hurdy-Gurdy.
Hurdy-Gurdy is dope,
that
man.
That game,
it's
alongside...
Hurdy-Gurdy is bad. it's like, and it would be perfect for a remaster thing as well, because the graphics are kind of
cel-shaded,
sepia toned, like almost like you're reading an old story fable sort of thing. It's beautiful. It's about this kid who needs to win a herding competition, and he herds dupes and greeps and gloops and blogs or whatever, like, and this giant big pink furry bear. It was mad.
I remember, because I mean, people talk about Sly Cooper as being the game that pioneered cel shading, but Hurdy Gurdy did its best on the PS1 tech. For me, if it's an old game that needs to be completely revamped, it's Soul Reaver. Because that thing just needs a new audience. You are worthy. Like, there's so much in that game. It's so cool. Plus, it's written by Amy Hennig, who went on to do Uncharted. And it's just like, characters like Kane, like Raziel, are just so, so well written. Like, even if you go back to it now, the opening cutscene from Soul Reaver is brilliant.
It's
like
the lore behind it as well. Yeah. Like, when they said that they were going to bring back Nozgoth, everyone was like, oh, this is going to be amazing, because we can finally get to back to the legacy of Kane world. And then it was like, here's all the lore, here's all the thing. And then it's like, it's a 4v4 shooter.
It's actually an arena shooter.
Arena shooter that's not very engaging at all.
And then like Legacy of Kain Defiance continues to just... It was just cancelled, never came back. Like, Soul Reaver is a huge part of
great
my...
shout.
Yeah, my childhood. Thank great you. Shout. What was yours, Mr. Josh?
I don't know, because you kind of put me on the spot and I'm trying to think of one. Mine genuinely would have been Resident Evil. Probably, maybe not 2, but 2 would have been up there.
Nemesis would have been pretty good.
Nemesis is great.
I've thought of an absolute dope one.
Go on.
Dino Crisis.
Yeah.
Or Parasite Eve.
I would, like, Dino Crisis fits with all the Jurassic World fandom.
Yeah, any sort of like survival horror thing. Oh my God. Did you guys ever play Galarians?
No.
New?
Dude, that game was sick. It was basically Galarians. Like you were a mutant boy who'd been experimented on, and he had this weird
psychokinesis
and stuff like that. Like, he could move objects with his mind and throw people around,
like,
and stuff. And then basically it was just about you trying to escape from a lab and find all these other test subjects. Okay. It was like survival horror, but you get to use mind powers.
Oh God,
as well.
If we're just talking about mind powers.
Okay, go.
PsyOps the Mindgate Conspiracy.
Yes,
absolutely phenomenal. Second Sight was good too.
Second Sight was about to say.
I would say PsyOps beat, like, they came out right next to each other.
Gasp.
PsyOps is way better than Second Sight.
Gasp.
I will give you a full-on video debate on that.
All right, I have one. Yes. It's Silent Hill 1. That's what I want. I went through that a few years ago.
Because the HD remakes were bad.
They were bad. Yeah. They actually took the fog out of the game, which made it worse.
Is silly. But the first one is still really good. It's really scary if you go back to it. Silent Hill 2 probably gets the most love. Silent Hill 3 is more action-packed. But Silent Hill 1, there's a rough around the edges charm to that the first Resident Evil 1 had. And I think if you give it the same treatment, you can sort of build upon the strong foundations that are there and haven't really been sort of revisited, because no one really remembers Silent Hill 1. We remember Silent Hill
2. Yeah, 2 definitely overshadows it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Next question. Very easy to answer question. Sure. This comes from Kane West, who says, is Jules really like that in the office? Like a maniac. Yeah, but not as much as you think.
I'm just a regular guy.
Just a regular guy.
I literally just do my time.
Jules is a lovely man.
He is a very lovely
man. I'm here for a court-mandated set amount of time. one day I'll be free when Ewan finally gives me the nod.
Oh, God.
Well, I mean, the thing is, just like, it, working here, it does drive you a little bit insane. All of us are mad in our own ways, but it's an incredibly fun job that
we have. Have you told you about trouble
like that?
Yes. Have you?
Did you? All right, okay, so Scott, yesterday, this is just for you guys at home.
Okay.
Now, Scott wore a T-shirt in yesterday, and he insists that it did not have any green on it, and he refused to take it off or cover it up because of the fact he wanted everyone to know that he had a shovel knight on it.
Well, that wasn't
the
point.
Even though it was definitely green.
It was not green. Check out the video that we did. Me and you did
the one that they told me that they had to do a mask on.
Yeah, they had to key it. They had to key it out.
So what does that tell you?
I just don't. But it's not green. Look up the color green and look up Shovel Knight. He's not green.
No, he's not. But the shadows on him were.
Well, maybe this confirms that you're a maniac because it's not green.
I didn't see this T-shirt, but I know for a fact it was green.
It's not green. game, but not to worry, it's fine. Next question from Jim, who says, if you could make one change to a single game, what game and change would it be and why?
Oh my God.
So assumedly it's stuff that had, I don't know, things that we liked a hell of a lot of, but it had one niggling flaw. Something that you would change. I mean, for mine, it's not a small change, but my mind goes to Deus Ex Human Revolution because the boss battles were absolutely terrible.
Yeah, they were.
And I wonder if they had more time, they could design bosses that reflected your character rather than forcing you into encounters that you weren't necessarily prepared for.
Bioshock Infinite, but make it a horror game.
Oh God.
Because I've wanted to love Bioshock Infinite so much. And you know what? The thing that really just tore down my hopes was the fact that they consistently tied it to the first two games, but then almost placed itself on a pedestal saying we're the better ones. I'll give you a good example is when they use the portal technology, the Rift technology to tear, that's the word I'm looking for, tear thing to look through, and they stole the ideas from the big daddy from Dr. Sushong, but then Dr. Sushong stole his ideas from them, implying that their people in Infinite were the smarter ones and that he was actually just a bumbling idiot that just happened to luck his way through. And it's like, oh, this is absolute billy.
See, even outside of that, like, the lore side of it was a bit, like, I couldn't get on board with it. But even outside of that, the way that it played, like, I always thought that fighting the big daddies was the worst part of Bioshock because you just bounce off them and there's no dodge button. And then
so now given the handyman,
and it was terrible.
They could only shoot in the heart and make them bullet sponges. And I didn't like, I didn't like the fact that they kept on having the numbers. Every time you shot them, you saw the amount of damage that you did in numbers above their head. It's like, talk about a great way of ruining the immersive factor of playing a video game.
I have that's my pet peeve in any game. Any game that has like numbers of it, I can see the allure of it, but it takes me right out of it.
If we ever get, like, I mean, we get comments on this depending on wherever we end up, hopefully somewhere with comments. People should say whether or not they like numbers coming off guns or coming off targets when you shoot them, because that is a hell of a 50-50 split. I can see both sides of it, it's but weird, I did not like it. Darksiders 2. It's not what I want.
It doesn't fit with, if it fits with the tone thematically, like, I'd say the Borderlands 2 could get away with it because it's called comical, over the top, and it's like, look how much we're doing it. That's an abuse of numbers and visual stimuli. In a game like Bioshock Infinite, I just didn't think that it suited it.
No.
Personally.
And even though it's a bigger, it's not a tiny change. It's quite hard to think of just off the cuff small changes.
It's not
a goddamn
JRPG. I don't see this, do I?
But the idea of Bioshock Infinite being more of like a corridor crawler, like Gone Home, or like a more fixed narrative experience, I think I would totally take that. Just strip the combat out of it.
I think I would take out, again, not a small fix, but not a huge fix. I would stop any enemy in Resident Evil 7 from not being able to be killed when you get chased around during the opening hours by Jack. It was fun for a little bit, but it was just a waste of ammo and he was just horrible by the end.
Especially when you became sort of more powered up and you're like, cool, I've got the handgun, I've got the shotgun, whatever. And it's just kind of like, but this is a waste of my time.
I remember the first time I put him down, I was like, yes, you're dead, you're going to stay there. And he got back up and I was like, shocked. When that happened the 10th time in the row, because you can go and hide from him, but you don't want to do that all the time. It just takes you out.
I'll tell you what, let's just roll off the back of this. Let's just say all games get rid of sewer levels as well.
Oh God!
Yes. Let's just get rid of not water levels. Water levels have their own place, but sewer levels, they are all the same.
We need to do some sort of investigative piece on the history of sewer levels, because where the hell did they come from, and why do game developers think that anyone wants to roam around in a sewer? Is it because of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Battletoads? I don't know.
Why are they all the same as well? Every single thing. Get to a point, you've got to do a crank to open a door, and then there's a flooding thing, sort of thing. Or it's like, oh look, there's rusted cage bar things that you can't get past through, but you see the enemy that's on the other side. It's like, oh my goodness.
You've just described every Spider-Man game ever. Why does that series in particular always have sewer levels? It's never let you...
Spider-Man's not a clever boy, is he? Because he'd be like, oh, my skill is zipping about on buildings in the air. Oh, where should I go? Oh, underground against slippery,
but
slimy...
But it's subversive, man. Oh, see you coming.
Yeah, but subversive doesn't mean that he's just be like, no, come out.
No, it's true. Just climb back out of the manhole cover and do why we like you.
Or twat with the manhole cover like you did in the end of Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah,
which looked awful.
Don't talk about that.
CGI on that was way too oversat. Anyway, but this is not the point. Not the point here.
Let's pivot into a different type of question. What is your average day at work like? Also says, they can't wait to listen and thank all you fine folks.
Thank you very much.
That comes from Nathan Paxton. Our average day involves a hell of a lot of trying to get as much stuff done as possible.
Whether it be
writing something, presenting something, emailing to contact someone about something. Or talking about ideas between us. Yep. It tends to be a big old rollout of everything.
It's one of those things where we have a schedule and we try desperately to keep to it, but we never do. For example, the filming, the recording of this, it was offset by studio booking.
Yes, Adam Cleary is currently waiting to do his thing because he's doing other stuff.
If you listen closely, you can hear the tap of his feet.
But yeah, they tend to just be just never ending, and it tends to result in a whole bunch of stuff getting put online.
But trust me, this is the thing. Orders. Like every single day flies past because of the fact that like working here is an absolute dream. Like if somebody was to say like, "Oh, do you want to go back to your to an office job or something?" I'd be like, "Hell no,
no, thank you."
What are you going to say, Josh?
I can't remember.
Oh, God.
Hard pass.
In that case, let me give you an easy one. What is your favorite first-person shooter? That comes from
That's
Emmett.
Not an easy one.
Oh, it's easier. Halo 2.
Is it?
Oh, no,
is
it's
it?
Not. Oh, it's Titanfall 2.
Wow. To be fair, though, Titanfall 2 is great. It's just completely underappreciated.
It's very much, yeah, it's overlooked, underappreciated. Mm. I mean, the thing is, the question was favorite first-person shooter, so you don't need to worry about objective standards. If you're going to go personal favorites, mine would be Halo 2, because that was the first one I took online, and I have the most memories associated with it.
Mine would be Time Splitters 2.
Nice.
It was released on my birthday back in 1933. Is it 2004, 5? Is that when it came out? Something like that? I can't remember.
Oh, 2004 for Time Splitters 2,
It came out around that time, and the story, single player alone, was fantastic. The multiplayer was phenomenal, and the challenge modes that you could get honestly Time Splitters, actually I might revise my thing of what could get the Resident Evil 2 treatment.
Okay.
Time Splitters 2, just beautify that and send that back out.
Time Splitters is top 5 dinner alive. It's so good.
I rescind my decision as well, although I love Soul Reaver Crash Team Racing.
Oh.
Because if you put that out now with the full network capabilities and all that kind of thing, just give me that, like a full HD version of
that. Don't give me that. That's my favorite first-person shooter, I think.
What is your favorite?
I don't know. I was thinking this. Potentially Bioshock, now you mentioned
it. Yeah, it's a fantastic game.
I went through the remastered trilogy last year, and it held up way better than I thought it was going to. It was even the shooting was pretty good, especially in number 2. I think as a series, potentially that. Or Call of Duty 4 is the basic one I'd go for. Because my God,
Call of 4
was
life-changing.
Modern Warfare 2 was amazing as well. It was so slick. Mm. And again, it's the Spec Ops mode that they added in. That's what hooked me for weeks.
Same. And you could do it in co-op as well. I mean, Modern Warfare was such a high point. Modern Warfare 1 and 2, both brilliant. Dropped the hell off after 3. For me, I dropped after 3.
That actually used to be our argument, Cecilia, actually. It didn't used to be knives only on Rust. It used to be skidoos and going down the hill. Who can get down there the fastest?
Nice. Yeah, that level was just one hell of a blur.
Loved it.
Handling was good.
I might go back and play that tonight.
Sure. I mean, the remaster's really good as well. So the next one up comes from the Doodler Adam, who says, who would be your dream character to include in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate? It can be from any franchise or series.
That's Gabe Logan. Great question.
Gabe Logan.
Mr. Gabe Logan.
Just with the taser. He tases them until they set on fire, which you could totally do.
Oh, yeah, you could. I think I'd probably go, I'd probably backpedal back to Raziel. Although he doesn't fit tonally because he's way too grimdark. I'm trying to think of old school.
Space Marine.
Maybe.
Which one with the Space Marine? Parappa the Rapper?
Yeah, Parappa's pretty good. He was in these PlayStation All-Stars.
Was he good? But anyone, man.
Yeah,
anyone.
Any franchise. I'm trying to think of someone who hasn't been in like a fun little brawler like that who would benefit from it.
Vib Ribbon.
Vib Ribs. What a shout.
Just she could turn into like the angel. She could turn into the worm. She could have all the things.
For the remaster thing as well. Because Vib Ribbon, I mean, if you haven't played Vib Ribbon, you play as a little wiry wireframe rabbit, and you travel left to right along the screen, and the levels are made from music, but you could put your own CDs in, and it would generate levels based on your own music. It was so good.
Sounds good.
And it was phenomenal.
It had one of the best opening theme songs ever. Josh is looking at us so confused.
Were you born then?
I probably wasn't. No, no, probably not.
He was just a twinge in his uncle's nutsack.
We'll at some point have to wrap this up because it's our first one.
It took way longer for you to get to that than I thought. So.
It's one per pod.
Yep.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah, at some point we'll have to wrap this up just because it's our first one, but we might go longer depending on the feedback.
Sure.
So, I don't know, we've got a couple of good, nice little hearty questions to go from here. Okay. This one's quite hard, but a name I can't pronounce, so I'm going to give that to you.
Okay.
What do you think that name is? I think it's Irish. I'm going to go with Sharon.
Kierant.
Kierant. You probably know who you are. Kierant says, who would you cast in the Metal Gear movie?
Oh.
Now, me and Jules did do a full video on this.
Yeah, we did.
And we debated who Solid Snake should be. Now, my choice back then was Scott Eastwood, not because of his acting chops, but because I think he replicates the Metal Gear Solid on the PS1 era Solid Snake.
Did I say Carl Urban for my
You
one?
Might have done. A lot that of the ones that people talk about, Carl Urban or Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
Or possibly Josh What's-His-Face from Lost, who plays
Holloway.
Sawyer.
Josh Holloway from Sawyer.
From Lost. So there's all them, but Josh, do you have a particular
You know what?
Pick?
I mean, this question has dogged me for 10 years. It's like, I can't find a perfect snake because, you know, when you're younger, you want just David Hayter to play it. But that's never, ever going to happen. And then obviously you go to people like Hugh Jackman or even Josh Holloway.
Yeah.
I don't know who I'd want to do it. Like Alexander Skarsgård, maybe?
What's
someone
he been
like
in?
That?
Recently.
I tell you what, this might be a really out there thing.
Go on, is it you?
No, not me. Okay. The shine on my forehead would give a signal to every guard in the mile
around. My name
is
The Shine.
But it's the dad from Modern Family. No. Not as his character. But trust me, you look at him. Imagine him in a imagine him in a serious role.
I don't know. I don't know who that man is. I just laugh because it's a man from a sitcom.
Can't remember his name, but he's bloody brilliant.
I'm sure he's great. I mean, at the end of the day, like, it depends what era they pick, because you've got like Metal Gear Solid 1, Snake is different to 2. 2 is obviously very more heavily modeled on Kurt Russell and things like that. Then you've got Big Boss, who's also a snake.
That's the thing. I've given all the Big Boss to Kurt Russell.
But the problem is that Kurt Russell, and this
Kurt Russell's
is no,
old.
It's no, offense, no offense to him as well. His body ain't in the right.
Even if you dressed him up like he was in Escape from LA now, I don't think he'd necessarily look that good. But I don't know who you get as a modern Kurt Russell. But the Metal Gear movie, as Jordan Vogt Roberts is finding out, is nigh on impossible to get off the ground, but hopefully he'll have something to announce at some point.
I kind of hope it doesn't come out,
the Metal Gear movie.
Kind of with you, just because of the fact that there hasn't really been a successful and commercially.
True. The I always like the Silent Hill movie. Like, I don't think it's
the ripping the skin off and throwing it at the church is
they
mwah, that
they
is,
get
that
the most
beautiful.
Elements right, I think. Like the most things right in terms of just what you want to see from a Silent Hill movie, the tone, the way that it's shot, like actually replicates the game camera.
Yeah.
Things like that. Like that stuff's really bang on. And then you have the enemy designs, like Pyramid Head looks brilliant and things like that. There hasn't been a truly great video game movie unless you do the Vogt Roberts thing, which is that movies like Edge of Tomorrow are already great video game movies. But I mean, it's a hell of a hill to climb.
Adam Cleary can play him.
He can. Is there anything that man can't do?
Exactly.
Okay, so we'll end on a slightly more generic question, but you can't have an inaugural podcast or crowdsourced question bucket without a question like this.
Okay.
So this comes from Emmy Yock and says, who would win in a fight, a Jedi or a wizard? He says, personally, a Jedi would win.
That is a toughie, isn't it?
A wizard?
Well, it depends. What type of wizard are we talking about? Are we talking like your namby-pamby Harry Potter wizard who just... like,
and we go full-on archetypal mage wizard. So let's think like Diablo.
Battle mage.
Yeah, battle mage. I mean, if we're going down the Jedi, then... because the thing is, let's do this properly. The assumption is that the Jedi can block lightning because there is a force technique where you can block lightning. Only if you're a dark side. And he said Jedi, not Sith. So... assumedly, they won't be able to block lightning, and a mage can.
The lightsaber blocks the lightning. You can absorb it.
That is a technique to master, though. I was thinking only dark side people could do that.
I mean, if it was a battle between a Jedi and a necromancer, then I would probably just be like the necromancer, just because he would just basically just get loads of like skeletons to like hold him down, use death, pull him into hell, easy.
Is a necromancer a wizard, though?
Well, uses the dark arts, if we're going wizard like Gandalf, sort of thing.
Yes.
That can only...
Skyrim wizards, mages, staff. Not hands, necromancy's a finger thing.
I think that maybe the Jedi's reaction skills probably would outwit.
It depends. I guess it depends what body of skills the wizard can pull from. Because assumedly, like, you have the lightning, you have elemental attacks.
But it's the defense for the wizard. Because, like, the wizard might be able to block, like, incoming, like, force push or force lightning if it has, like, a big bubbly shield sort of thing.
Which they usually do.
But if, like, the lightsaber's being thrown at you and being force controlled to slice through, and we have determined that a lightsaber would cut through most things.
Well,
except
me and you
Captain
have.
America's
that video
shield.
Never made it to air.
Never did, no. Yes. But that's why I think that maybe the Jedi would win. Maybe?
Depends on one major thing.
Go on.
Who has the high ground?
True.
I guess in this case, it would start with them on a level playing field, and then assumedly one of them gets the high ground.
Jedi would always find the high ground for Jedi.
The thing with that is that proves that a Jedi, if they're on the low ground, they're somehow fundamentally flawed, and a wizard can easily get to the high ground.
Not fundamentally flawed, just they'll always be on the high ground.
The great Darth Vader himself fell to the fact that he was slightly lower down a hill.
Exactly.
So a wizard just needs to step up 3 steps and he can win. I think a wizard would win because a Jedi can't block the vast array of abilities that a wizard can tap.
But
on.
Then again, as I play D&D quite a lot, so you need to actually be focused quite a lot to cast spells.
That's true.
And according to D&D rules, you need to have spells memorized or concentrate. Now, your concentration can be broken if you are mind controlled. Mm-hmm. If you have a Jedi mind trick, then you can't think of anything, and then you're just a guy with a staff.
Exactly.
Trust me, I've beaten up many of those in my life, and they're easy.
It's very true. I think if we bring in the endurance factor, a Jedi has more training and knows how to go the distance, whereas the majority of wizards, either it's an innate ability or it's something that they only got from a school of Winterhold.
if you get someone like Yoda flipping around all over the place,
you wouldn't get to him for anything, would you?
No, exactly. You'd be like, what is going on? And then you'd be in half and falling down a well or something.
Yeah, actually, I'm fully in the Jedi camp now, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're going to go Jedi?
Yes.
I'll go wizard.
I'll go Jedi.
Jesus. Okay, well, in that case, we'll have to go with unanimous decision, which is that the Jedi would beat the wizard.
This is exactly how Crash Bandicoot became one of the best games of last year.
Genuinely is. Yes. Like, I cannot get across how truthful that statement is, and we have to live with the consequences. So from here on in, a Jedi can beat a wizard, and we'll go from there. So yes, let us know, I don't know, what you guys thought of this, depending on where you hear it. Get back in touch with us all on Twitter. Jules, what is your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is @RetroJ with a zero.
Mine's @JoshBroon with two O's.
Nice. And mine is @_LP89. I think that's actually not even true. I think it's actually /LP _89. You'll find us. Just search for our names. And thank you very much for listening. We'll catch you guys next time on the next Pop Culture Gaming Podcast. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.